From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Before I introduce today's guest and talk postal, it's important that we note that we have entered the budget funny season on Capitol Hill, where postal employee and retiree benefits are indeed in the congressional crosshairs. We anticipate that the House Budget Committee will send to the House floor a package which will instruct the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability to slash about $50 billion from programs under its jurisdiction. Postal and federal employee benefits, both retirement and health, figure prominently among those programs that are being targeted. Now on to the main event, and main event, I really mean it. Today we have with us a returning guest, Kevin Kosar, who works at the American Enterprise Institute as a senior fellow. Kevin's expertise covers the U.S. Congress, the administrative state, American politics, and the Postal Service. Last year, he appeared live at NAPS's annual legislative conference that was recorded for a podcast. Much earlier in his career, Kevin spent more than a decade working at the Congressional Research Service, where he focused on a wide range of public administration issues, most notably the Postal Service. He has appeared on broadcast media as well as written for numerous publications. And I want to welcome Kevin here today. Kevin, welcome.
Bob, good to be back.
It is actually rather auspicious for you to appear with me on this week's episode of Naps Chat. Today is Friday, February 21st, and yesterday the Washington Post broke a story which indicated that President Trump will shortly sign an executive order which will have the effect of dismantling the Postal Service as we know it by firing all the Board of Governors and folding the Postal Service into the Department of Commerce, which is being led by Secretary Lutnick, who has been quoted as supporting privatization of the Postal Service. What's your reaction to all this?
On the one hand, it's stunning because it is an action that would be brazenly contrary to the plain language of the law. You know, the 1970 statute's been around 55 years, and it says quite clearly Postal Service is an independent establishment of the executive branch. It's got an appointments provision that provides for the president and the Senate to choose governors, but ultimately the governors then choose the postmaster general. And the board was supposed to serve a very important function in the design of the Postal Service, both, you know, managerial, but also representative. Because the idea that Postal Service is a public service, and so you should have America's pluralism to some degree reflected on that board. So for Mr. Trump to just say, well, we're going to just fire everybody on the board and then fold it into another department, it runs clearly against what the statute says. Now, on the other hand, if I intuit what they're up to, essentially this is part of a larger conservative play against the administrative state, much of which is comprised of independent agencies that are not directly answerable to a president. We've seen this with the Consumer Finance Protection Board, for example. I think the strategy here is Mr. Trump will act, and then he'll say, sue me. And no doubt, somebody will sue. Washington Post article indicates that the governors themselves are thinking about filing suit. And then it'll go up to the court, and the high court is going to have to decide whether or not the statute, 55 years old though it is its appointments provisions are unconstitutional, or whether there are larger constitutional questions there.
If you believe that the 1970 Postal Reorganization Act, upon which the Postal Service is structured, is unconstitutional because of its appointments, it subsequently created an inspector general, which is accountable and hired by a board of governors that may no longer exist. You have a postal regulatory commission that has certain functions within that act that are subject that are presidentially nominated and Senate confirmed. You have rate setting processes. You have a whole series of intertwined federal responsibilities and rules. How do you untangle that in the Department of Commerce, which has had absolutely no experience in postal operations ever in the history of our country?
Yeah, I guess I would say if immediately regarding the Department of Commerce, the idea that it would be folded into the Department of Commerce, you can't do that without passing a new law. You know, the Postal Service is empowered, for example, to go through the appropriations process each year and submit a budget on its own. You can't just throw it in the Department of Commerce and say, now you have to run your budget through the Department of Commerce and be part of that budget request. Like that can't fly. I think what they're going to do, if I read the story correctly, is that if the Secretary of Commerce is kind of wearing two hats running this thing, then he's going to exert some level of authority over the agency, its strategic plans, possibly its budget request. But getting back to what the high court's going to do, assuming they take the case, it's hard to say. You know, sometimes the court decides to rule on very, very narrow grounds. Other times they make a big sweeping ruling. And so whether this can spill over into a larger realm where rate making could be affected or other agencies that are also like the Postal Service, there are other independent establishments out there that they would be ruled unconstitutional, I just can't predict.
What's unique about the Postal Service, and this goes back to the founding of our government, is that it's an Article I. It is a congressional responsibility to establish a Postal Service. Only in the 1780s, through the Postal Act of that year, did you have the creation of a separate agency with a presidentially nominated, Senate-confirmed Postmaster General. Prior to that law, the Postmaster General was hired by the United States Congress.
Yeah. I mean, how far the court would want to go back on that? I mean, you think about the various Article I authorities. I mean, it says, you know, that Congress can, you know, mint coins and declare the value of money. But then ultimately, these things get moved over to the executive branch for execution. And postal is a perfect example of that. It would be a very strange thing if, in the name of kind of a rigorous originalism, that the power that is supposed to be wielded by Congress could not be delegated, that it would have to be rolled back in some way, shape, or form. I should mention that, you know, I'm no attorney, but, you know, last year when we had the court decision in Loper Bright and Relentless, which struck down Chevron deference relating to, you know, regulation and how much executive agencies can regulate separate from clear congressional direction. One thing the court didn't say anything about is delegation. They didn't bring up whether or not Congress can give that authority away through a statute. So maybe rate making and these other things that have been kicked over to the PRC and the Postal Service, maybe those things can stay there.
Let's go up into the stratosphere and look down at the way things are happening right now with the Postal Service and other agencies. When we learned our high school civics, we learned about separation of powers and checks and balances. My question is, in the current, I guess, construct of this administration, Trump too, what is the concept of checks and balances?
Yeah, you have unified government right now. And, you know, look, in the recent decades, particularly unified government, when one party controls Congress and both chambers and the presidency, you get quasi-parliamentary behavior where the majority party kind of indulges the executive and lets them run wild to varying degrees. Mr. Trump is clearly taking that really far, and GOP has been hanging back. You know, parties do not want to trip up their own president early in the administration. And if they have a dispute, they want to keep it quiet. Now, of course, I'm old enough to remember in the 1970s when we had a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president named Jimmy Carter, and that Congress regularly slapped him down. He also turned out to be a one-term president. And I think one of the lessons that parties have taken away is that you as a legislator, your fate is some way bound up with the president of your party's public approval, and you hurt that approval by fighting that president in an open sort of way. And so they have become increasingly hesitant to challenge presidents when they do things. And that's what's happening right now. But eventually they will start challenging.
Which brings me to a column you wrote, I believe it was in November or December, where there was a lot of clamor and concern about Lutnick's comments and unnamed sources within the transition, the Trump transition, about privatizing the Postal Service. And you said that would be an extremely difficult proposition because particularly of rural Republican members of the House of Representatives resisting. Do you want to revisit that analysis?
I think it still holds. Look, I've studied privatization. In some cases, privatization can be a good option. You know, for example, in the mid-90s, the Clinton administration partnered with Congress to engage in some privatization activities. There was, the Elk Hills fields, which I guess had some petroleum or mineral resources that they sold off to the private sector. Privatization is not inherently a bad idea, but for me, when I look at the U.S. Postal Service, conceptually, I don't know how it can work. We are a continent-wide republic, plus we have Alaska, Hawaii, we have U.S. Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico. That's very different than trying to privatize a postal service in a small European nation or something even as a little bit bigger. I mean, it's just inherently complicated. And with mail volume sliding downward, it becomes an open question of like, well, what could privatization possibly look like? Are we talking about making a single private company that will have to stand on its own? Are we talking like William Henderson, the former postmaster, suggested, and making it an ESOP, an employee stock ownership plan, where the workers would own it and some of the shares would be sold to the private sector? Or are we talking about multiple companies popping up in various regions that would somehow be in charge of this? Whatever we're talking about, it's going to require writing a law. And right now, Congress has struggled to do that. And to take on something like the Postal Service and to completely rewrite its statute seems fantastically unlikely.
With the effort to fold the Postal Service into the Department of Commerce, to the extent that that become, let me ask you this. Do you think it's real? Do you think that the piece that was written by Jacob Bajaj in the Washington Post about calling for the folding of the Postal Service into the Department of Commerce, do you think that's real? Is that a pipe dream? Is that testing the waters? What is that?
Yeah, no, I think it looks very similar to what happened with the Kennedy Center, where Mr. Trump just fired the whole board and then named himself chairman. It looks a lot like what happened with the USAID, where it was, you know, guess what? The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, is now in charge. So this kind of executive power play where you're taking these entities and pulling them closer to the presidency, it looks a lot like that. What does it mean in the immediate term? It's not clear to me in terms of the effects on the Postal Service itself. Is Mr. Lutnick going to thwart DeJoy's DFA plan, start rolling that back? What's he going to do? Is he going to be a caretaker? Utterly unclear.
So you suspect that Howard Lutnick is going to be the de facto postmaster general if this were to come into fruition without anyone hiring him as a so-called postmaster general?
Yeah, I mean, Mr. DeJoy has not resigned in his notice. Earlier in the week, he said that, you know, he would like to step down. He would like the board to start looking for a replacement, but he's not gone yet. So the question is, does DeJoy get to stay on in this kind of interim period? Does he go out the door? Does the deputy float up and hold the job for a time? I mean, over at the National Archives, take another example, you know, the archivist was fired by Mr. Trump, and for a certain number of days, the deputy was in place, but then the deputy was shown the door. And an acting Trump official was named in charge of the archives. We might be getting that same play here.
So let's talk about the removal authority. Do you think that President Trump has the unilateral ability to remove the Postal Board of Governors and potentially the Postal Regulatory Commission commissioners under the current law? or does or within the presidential authority to do so? Does he have that authority?
Yeah, this is the collision between what the law says and what you believe the Constitution may imply. The law is quite clear. Governors, Board of the Postal Service can only be removed for cause. Now, what's cause? That's a whole other rabbit hole we could go down. If a president wants to just invent a cause, is that enough? I don't know. But there are those who argue that statutory restrictions on a president's removal authority are unconstitutional. They argue that a president has absolute authority. And so for Congress to try to limit that authority is not appropriate. And I imagine that's one of the things that's going to be tested by the courts. You know, look, I think that provisions curbing the extent of removal authority, I mean, they've been around for many decades. And so this is kind of a constitutional philosophy issue. You know, do you believe stare decisis, let the decision rest, should carry out? Or do you believe that a kind of purer interpretation of the Constitution demands that you strike down even long-settled precedents? And that's just an open debate.
Do you think that the failure of the United States Senate to confirm three governors last year, 2024, combined with the DFA, the Delivering for America plan, not going according to plan, and the difficulty that DeJoy has had in dealing with Congress most recently, all conspired to bring us to the point we are today, where President Trump may try to remove everybody?
I'm not sure the failure to appoint board members makes a difference. There were plenty of people on the Kennedy board, including Mr. Rubenstein, who had raised $111 million of his own funds for the institution, and they all got wiped out. So I don't think that plays into it. I do think the Postal Service's continuing financial struggles and the various logistics cockups that have occurred in places like Atlanta and Indianapolis affecting delivery and the, you know, put those things together and it doesn't look like DeJoy is doing a great job, that it makes him more vulnerable. But, you know, honestly, Mr. Trump has shown that it doesn't really matter how well you're doing at a job. If he wants to remove you, he'll remove you. I mean, there was nothing, the archivist of the United States, Dr. Colleen Shogan, she was doing a good job. And she was actually standing up to a small number of kind of woke employees at the archives who were pushing for politicized exhibits. And still Mr. Trump fired her.
Do you think that President Trump's disappointment with DeJoy not placating him in, as a result of the 2020 election and the mail-in balloting played into his disappointment in DeJoy's leadership in the Postal Service?
No, I've got no evidence to that. I mean, Mr. Trump was quite clear. He thought that fraud had been perpetrated at the state and local level by Democrats in control, particularly those, you know, in instances where rules were changed about ballot procedures and the like. I don't make a connection there. And seeing as Mr. Trump has kind of very little self-control over what he likes to say, he just pops off whatever's in his head. If he felt that, I would have thought we would have heard it sooner.
So you don't think that played any role in this decision about the Postal Service generally?
No, I mean, I just see this as part of a larger plan. Actually this morning, one of the things I did was I tweeted out a post I have where I list some of the other independent establishments of the executive branch, like the Harry S. Truman Scholarship Foundation. And I put those out there just because I think it's entirely possible those also are going to be kind of dominoes falling because it's all part of a larger plan of consolidating presidential power.
U.S. Patent and Trademark Office?
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know what the...
I don't know if that
one's going to go out there, but that would be...
The only reason why I say the Patent and Trademark Office is that those are two congressional authorities under Article 1, Section 8, right with the Postal Service. And mm-hmm. both the Postal Service and the Trademark Office raise their revenue, their budget, is raised by revenue, not by necessarily an appropriation. So there's a certain synergy between the two organizations.
Yeah, you know, and that pulls me back to you asked earlier about the Senate. You know, look, when Congress writes laws and puts in something in a statute about, say, the limits of a president's removal authority, whether it's constitutional or not constitutional is one issue. But when they put it in the law, they're laying down a marker. They're saying, like, this is a line you should not cross, Mr. President. Otherwise, you know, we have tools at our disposal to make your life difficult. And so a question I have is, how many senators right now are upset about this? They haven't necessarily spoken up. Perhaps they're members of the GOP. But they're thinking, you know what? He really wants my vote on reconciliation. He wants my vote on a number of things. He doesn't have it right now. He's going to have to bargain with me one way or another. I just have to wonder if that's going to happen.
You think this is, might be a bargaining chip?
We'll see. We'll see. It's a funny thing. I mean, we like to think of the U.S. Congress, when it deals with issues, as dealing with them in isolation. Like, what's the merits of this issue? Decide up or down on it. But in fact, everything is linked. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could have a perfectly good piece of legislation introduced in the Senate, and a couple members will cross their arms and say it's not going anywhere because they're ticked off about something completely different. Yeah. And they're bargaining, using that as a bargaining chip for that. So how they respond to this postal thing and whether they decide to exert their leverage, we'll see.
Yeah, I noticed also in the story appearing in this morning's Washington Post that the Board of Governors has retained outside counsel to litigate this should there be an executive order. But interestingly enough, two of the Board of Governors did not participate in those discussions. Derek Kahn, who worked in the Trump administration and in his first term, and also Robert Duncan, a Republican nominee to the Board of Governors. I'm just curious, should we read anything into that?
Yeah, hard to say. You know, they may kind of be playing both sides of the game where, you know, let these other people put their names on the complaint. And if it prevails, great. Yay, I win. But I don't want to tick off Mr. Trump because maybe there's some other place I can help him out in this administration. So I won't put my name on it. There could be something like that at work. It's hard to say. I should mention that, you know, back in 1993, and this is something I have to go back and reread a little more deeply. I mean, George H.W. Bush tried to fire the Postmaster General and board members, and a federal court judge put a stay on the action. And then ultimately, it didn't play out. Could that happen again here? I don't know.
Interesting. It didn't get up to the Supreme Court, as I recall.
No, I don't think so.
Do you think the Postal Regulatory Commission has something to worry about?
I think the president's shown he's happy to do just about, remove just about everyone and anything. I mean, we have park rangers in Iowa and other parts of the country who are now without jobs. They're able to be fired, and they're not anywhere. You can't construe them as being members of the deep state. Why not an inside D.C. regulatory board?
Do you think also that putting Lutnick as sort of the head of the, or at least having authority over the Postal Service, provides an opening for Doge, for Elon Musk's crew to come into the Postal Service?
Sure.
Because right now that they have not gone in, as of yet, they have not apparently gone into the entity.
Yeah. And certainly, I mean, people think of Doge and they think about its cuts, but the greater power of Doge, at least from where I sit, is its ability to create a narrative. You know, the man who runs it has, 200 million followers or some unbelievable quantity, and he can take an agency which is not in the news and or where people may have, you know, not really fixed opinions on it, and then he could tweet out, you know, screenshots of spreadsheets and make claims about waste and fraud and corruption and things like that. And it kind of sets the conversation and bloodies up the agency and puts it on immediately on the defensive. It's that PR aspect of Doge, which is very powerful.
Let me touch on that. And this is probably the last substantive question I'll ask of you. yes, you can bloody up an agency that has not been in the news. The Postal Service and its problems have been in the news for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the negative publicity that the postal operations has generated most recently, they still are the most valued, most favorably rated agency there is. The American public likes the Postal Service, and they like the employees of the Postal Service, despite everything that's going mm-hmm. on. How does that factor into what's going on?
Yeah, it's a real peculiar dissonance. People, on the one hand, love the Postal Service, but there's also this kind of, you know, like from Seinfeld, Newman image of, oh, you know, it's not well run. And of course, people keep seeing the headlines of multi-billion dollar losses. So I think DOGE amping up the narrative that, oh, there's all sorts of waste and inefficiencies in here, and there's contracts going for useless IT or whatever they decide to say. I think that could really, you know, kind of stoke the president's case and build public support for, you know, the presidential takeover.
My last question. Now, one of the things I did not mention in your introduction is that not only are you an expert in Congress and politics and the Postal mm-hmm. Service, you're also an expert on whiskey and bourbon. So I want to ask you, should Washington take up drinking with what's going on today?
Yeah, it might help. It might help. I think there's a lot of shock and awe going on right now. And perhaps over the weekend, pouring a glass of something stiff and tasty while the cold winds swirl outside and the tumults of government churn, and sipping it and taking a deep breath to try to get a sense of where you're at, because it's no good going through life being constantly rattled and anxious. So a beverage could help, and it'd be all the better if you could have that beverage with good company.
That sounds great. Before we sign off, I just want to, and we spoke about this, the lyrics from one of my favorite musicals of recently, Monty Python's Spamalot. And the lyrics go, some things are really bad. They can make you really mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's grizzle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
Always look on the bright side of life.
With that being the last word, thank you so much, Kevin, for joining me today on Naps Chat.
Bob, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, and wonderful doing a duet with you right here. I want to thank also Naps Chat listeners for logging on. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store or any platform that you're listening to, and more importantly, share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. With that, always look on the bright side of life.
I'm gonna stand right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna